Professor Rettig, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends and dear young friends, to speak on a such prestigious university, I should apologize for my very bad English. For my work, I need to know 10 languages. I know only 8, and English is my last language. But I hope you will understand me. This lecture had 2 parts, the murders among us and the consequences of the Holocaust. Let us start with the first. I am sure you are confronted with people, they say, now 40 years after the war, the world has absolutely other problems. Why to warm this cold coffee? Only a small number of Nazis are alive, and they are old and sick. And what concern these Nazi criminals, no more witnesses. If they are witnesses, they are not accurate witnesses. So many acquittals we have in the courts in Germany and in Austria. Let us be occupied with other current problems of our time. This Holocaust was not the last. We had a Holocaust against the Igbos in Nigeria. We had some genocide in Uganda in the time of Idi Amin. We had a Holocaust in Cambodia and many, many others. I think I can answer this question, why? Ladies and gentlemen, this 40 years is only a matter of the calendar. This was not 40 years search for Nazi criminals. For these people, they commit the biggest crime in the human history. Only in the first 3 years, both allies, East and West, or look for these persons. But after the Berlin blockade, with the beginning of Cold War, we had a 12 years close season for murderers. Between 48 and 60, nothing had happened. You see, from this 40 years, we should deduct this 12 years, but we should deduct much more. Only the Nazis, and especially the Nazi criminals, had used these 12 years, I would say especially the first few years, with the help of a number of underground organizations, like Spider, Six Star, Odessa. They have managed to bring out from Europe, from Germany, from Austria, through Italy, in many cases with the help of welfare organizations from the Vatican, a big number, thousands and thousands of these people, they had a reason to left Europe because they had committed crimes. Before the end of the war, and this was my first discovery when I was working with the Office of Special Investigations, in Linz, we came in a possession of a document, and this was minutes from a meeting in Maison Rouge in the Red House in August 44, 1944. What will be after the war, and how to save Nazism, and how to prevent, and how to give possibility to people, they will be a victim of hatred, how to save them. In these minutes, in the attendance of this meeting, was people from the foreign ministry, from the German foreign ministry, it was people from the German industry. They decided to save, first of all, German money. Should not come in the possession of the Allies. In a number of banks in Tangier, in Morocco, in Liechtenstein, in Switzerland, they open accounts under the names of people they are very proper to them. Sometimes when the confidence was a high confidence, assistant of Kaltenbrunner, they put it on his name. In many other cases, put the money on two names, but one don't know the other. When you hear sometime that people are looking in the lakes of Austria and Germany, you think they are look for money? No. They look for the list of these people. They are the key to this money. In 1945, when the Reich collapsed, before this, because I'm telling about this because this is not so known, they buy in South America, in Brazil, in Argentina, in that countries they was at that time not in the status of the war against Germany, about 750 firms. And after the war, we saw that these people, they were going out from Europe, they were going to these countries. The inquiry committee, after the fall of Peron, and I had the occasion to talk to a member of this inquiry committee, and I am proud to be that I was his friend. This was Silvano Santander. He gave me the knowledge what they find out. Over $500 million of the currency of 45, this is maybe like today, and the weight maybe $10 billion, was taken out from all these banks and sent to Argentina. Perón gave to a reception committee in Buenos Aires 7,500 identity card blank. And with this Argentinian identity card, they was going to Paraguay, to Brazil, and to many, many other countries. This was one of the ways. Was another way that a number of them was invited from Italy to the Near East countries, especially after the creation of the State of Israel, a specialist in propaganda and also a specialist for a new rocket program of Egypt against Israel. But this specialist in Egypt, after a time, they was going back to Germany or go to other countries, like to Red China, for an example, after they broke the relations with Soviet Union, it means this friendship relations, not the diplomatic relations. And we had another group of people. They had used the Cold War. And the other group of people are in your country. When the Nazis invaded the eastern countries, they have not recognized the population. I remember when I was 2 years in Soviet Union, and I was in Odessa and Kharkov and Kiev and other places, on the streets, all people look the same dressed, the same faces, the same, character of the faces. When the Germans was coming in to the Baltic countries, to Ukraine, to White Russia, was a number of people coming to them and say to them, we knew your program, We know you are looking for communists and you are looking for Jews. We will help you. And the Germans was very glad that they can create special squads. Ukrainian police, White Russian police, Lithuanians, Latvians, Estonians, and they ordered them to make, with the help naturally and under the leadership of the Nazis, to make these countries clean, free of Jews. The guilt of these people is much bigger than the guilt of the Nazis, because they was living with their future victims in the same place, very often going to the same school, sometimes in the same houses. In the Baltic countries, they had common businesses, and they was the only one. They had a profit from the property of the victims. In 1944, when the German war machinery was going back to Germany, they was the only one whom the Germans allowed to take their families and go with them to Germany. At the same time in Germany was millions of slave laborers from all the Eastern European countries. They mixed with them when the Reich collapsed. Nobody knew about them. And in 48, at the beginning of the Cold War, was coming from United States a big number of Secret Service agents. Why? Because the Cold War could overnight change to a hot war. United States was never involved in Secret Service operations and seek information about Soviet Union, about the Eastern countries. They was involved in Japan, they was involved in Italy and in Germany. And it was now the same people. So this people was coming naturally to the displaced person camps, and it was again the same people. They was coming first to the Germans, now was coming to the Americans. We know you look for information. So we will give you the information. And this Secret Service agents was very happy. Now they knew people they could tell them. And this is not so easy, you know, this Secret Service operations. Why? In a country like Soviet Union, is a telephone directory a big secret? You cannot get it like in your country or in other countries. We don't know, and I presume that many of that people for this Secret Service operations was coming from Far East. They have not asked these people, their informers, if they commit crimes. I wish not to play the advocatus diaboli. I believe in 90% they don't know. But in a number of cases, I know they know. I had one case, I give it to you as an example. In 48, I arrest in Linz in Austria a man who was a mayor in a Ukrainian city in the western Ukraine. He was working together with the Gestapo, and his dream was to have a city without Jews. After the war, only two Jews remained from this 2,000 they was in this city. And in 48, they escaped to Soviet Union, and when they was coming back, no one person was alive. So these people was going west, was coming to Austria, and by occasion they was coming to me and tell me the story. And I find the man, naturally, and with the help of the military police, I arrest him. The next day, he was free. So I was going to the military police, and I say, yes, on an order of military intelligence, the man is free. I was going to the boss, the military intelligence in Linz. You say, yes, he is my informer, he should be free. But I say to him, look, this man commits such big crimes. You say, this is not my business. I am here to collect information. So I was going to another group of Secret Service, or the Office of Direct Intelligence, a higher organization. They promised me to arrest him. Since that time, the man disappeared. I don't know if he's alive, if he lives here under Ramashrum's name. But I give you this as an example, because for these people, it was the priority. Maybe I tell you something about this time to understand it. When the Cold War began, I was in Nuremberg, work in the archives. And in one moment, I saw this, everything is packed. I saw sent to Alexandria, Washington. I talked to some judges and prosecutors. They say, no, this case, there should be in 3 months, will not be more. I could not understand it. And then I asked the chief of the archives, he was a colonel, and he said to me, Simon, you are living on the moon? You don't see what's going on? We have in Europe only small units. From the other side of the demarcation line in East Germany are hundreds of thousands of Russians. When the Uncle Joe, they call for Stalin, will give an order, overnight, we and the Nazi criminals are together in Siberia. And I say, for this, we have lost so many people during the war. He said, Simon, about this, there are no discussion. I was not content with this and talked to another man. He said to me, what is your profession before? I say, I was an engineer, architect. So, as a such man, you should be realistic. Look on the map of Europe. Europe cannot be defended without the Germans. We must create a German army. We cannot create a German army and put German generals in jail. So now you understand the whole problem. But coming back to these collaborators, again American collaborators, they know the same. When the Cold War will change in a hot war, they are in a big personal danger, because after our invasion, the Soviets recognized them, they knew about them, they have collected informations in all the places about them. They began to press these people from the Secret Service agencies, help us to emigrate. And they helped them. In many cases, they had the first preference before survivors of Nazi camps. And this took a lot of time before we are part of them, we find them in your country. A big number in Canada and a big number in your country. This took time. My first case was 64 in the United States. This woman, Ryan Braunsteiner. I find her 64. But she was extradited to Germany 72. 8.5 years later, she was the only one that she got life imprisonment in Germany, in the trial in Düsseldorf. But when I came in contact with this organization in the United States, what handled these cases, this was Immigration Naturalization Service, 3 or 4 people, they handle about the, I myself had delivered them 60 or 70 cases. But how can 4 people without a budget, without good connections to other organizations like FBI, local police and so, handle cases, one case in Waterbury, Connecticut, the other in San Diego, the third in Chicago, the fourth in Seattle, and the fifth in Florida. I'm not talking about. And all this when I was coming and They say we do our best. So I began talks with congressmen, with senators. Was a very big help. It was at that time the congresswoman Liz Holtzman, congressman Christopher Dodd, his father was a judge in Nuremberg, and many, many others. In 1979 was created the Office of Special Investigations with a good budget, with a big number of prosecutors, investigators, but in many cases too late. Anyway, they are here very difficult problems. You have to do with people, they commit crimes. But in the time when they commit the crimes, they were not Americans. The place of the crime was not United States, and the victims was not United States citizens. So the only what you can do against them, you can take away their citizenship and deport them. My dear friends, the history of the Cold War was not written yet. But we know. East and West lose the Cold War. They lose people. They lose money. They lose prestige. The only winners of the Cold War are the Nazi criminals and the Nazi collaborators. This is without any deduction. Somebody will say, yes, they are also other winners. No, they are, believe me, the only winners. Last year, for an example, people are always paralyzed by some 40 years or 25 years. This is in human thinking. 40 years should be done something, or 50 years should be done something. 39 is not enough, and 40 and 41 is too much. So in our office in Vienna, we make a look in our cases, and we have a long search list. I find out, I was look first for these people, for the Nazi collaborators. And they was, a part of them was going to the foreign SS units. I have sent to the Office of Special Investigations a list of 1,820. Only SS officers, not Germans, Ukrainians, people from the Baltic countries, Russians, Slovakians, Romanians, Hungarians, whom we could not find in Europe and from whom we know that they survived the war. I know a part of them are in your country. We don't know from all of them of what crimes they had committed, but we know when these people made the applications for a visa for United States, when they had mentioned that they were members of the SS, they could not enter United States. This means they lie by their application, and later they lie, they swore false when they got the citizenship. I have sent special to Canada a list of only Ukrainians, because for the Ukrainians is Canada a favorite country. They are living there, and over a million Ukrainians. And when you take the telephone directory, for an example, Toronto, and you will see they are there about five Ukrainian veterans organization. Five. I think could be naturally Ukrainian veterans organization, because the Ukrainians, they were born in Canada, was members of the Canadian army during the war. But the last real Ukrainian army was 1919. This means it could not be alive, or maybe they are, because 1919, this is people, they are born in the last century. And who are these people from? They are people from the SS division. during only one look in the telephone directory of Toronto, and with the help of my friends from this list of 218, I find 28. And in Vancouver, I find another number. And all these people are in the telephone directory because they feel safe and because the immigration papers from the 10 years after the war in Canada disappeared. Nobody could find them. And we don't know, and nobody knows what was in their applications. I had the possibility to talk with members of the Crown Commission, and they told me this. About 10 years ago, knowing what's going on in Canada, that nothing will happen, I refused to take invitations to go to Canada. I refused to take honorary degrees offered me by Canadian universities. And I refuse also to come to commemorations of the Jews in connection with the Holocaust. I say I am not going to a democratic country in which so many people, they commit crimes, are living free. During the time, I have sent many, many dossiers about people that are living in Canada, and they commit big crimes. Some of them was by non-communist governments from the eastern countries immediately after the war sentenced. Maybe I will tell you one case, then you will see that people with a past are always a security risk. When Khrushchev was in Vienna, 1961, an elderly woman was going through the cordon from all the agents and went to Khrushchev and give him a cover, a letter. 12 years later, this woman passed away, and her son was looking after a time on all the papers and find the answer, not from Khrushchev, but from KGB. What was in the letter? This elderly woman from Stanislav in Poland was asking Khrushchev, telling him the name of the man who killed her husband as a chief of the Ukrainian police in Stanislav. And a half years later, she received a letter from KGB that the man for whom you are looking lives in London, Ontario. Give his address and his telephone number. When this man brought me this letter, I was looking for the man. Yes, he was in London, Ontario. Now he is in Vancouver, in Canada. I told this to the Duchesne Commission, and because we had evidence, we had collect evidence against this man, and the people from the Duchesne Commission tell me yes, but the goal. So, let us go to other things. After so many years, it's time to think about handicaps. What hinder us in all these years to bring justice in this case? One of the biggest handicaps was a false description invented by the Ministry of Information of the Reich in Goebbels, 1941. This was the description, war criminal. 1943, adopted by the Allies, and after the war, adopted by the whole world. Ladies and gentlemen, the crimes of the Nazis has only a very, very little to do with the war. They start 6 years before the war with the building of the concentration camps, with the Nuremberg law against the Jews, with the massacres and the so-called Night of the Long Knives, Kristallnacht, and the first steps and the direction of the final solution was before the war. And during the war, the extermination of millions of innocent people took part in camps like Treblinka, Majdanek, Sobibor, Belzec. They was at that time situated 1,000 miles or 800 miles from the front. These crimes had absolutely no influence on the war. And the war cannot excuse these crimes. The only what they have common with the war, that the Nazis had invaded the biggest part of Europe and could extend the number of the victims. May I give you one small, very, very small example. In summer 1943, I think this was in July, the Nazis arrest the last 800 Jews from the Greek island of Rhodes, brought them by boat to Saloniki, and put them naked in a train. Why naked? In many cases, the Nazis are using this psychological trick. Naked people never resist. Without food, without water, without any sanitary installations, they had shipped them 11 days from Greece to Hungary, to Yugoslavia, to Hungary, to Poland, and after 11 days was coming in Treblinka only 156 alive, and they was put in the gas chamber the next day. What has this crime to do with the war? Only that the Nazis invaded a Greek island. Absolutely nothing more. This was war crimes from both sides. Bombing of Coventry, bombing of Dresden by the Americans, a bombing of Warsaw and of Rotterdam. Hiroshima was a war crime. But these Nazi crimes, I call them Nazi crimes, prepared on a long time, for a long time, an absolute industrial principle. There's nothing to do with the war. And they are another difficulty. When we call these crimes war crimes, we make from the criminals soldiers. They was in uniforms, but he was in had weapons, but he was not soldiers. A soldier fight with a risk. He can kill, he can be killed. But these people in the concentration camps and in the ghettos and before the execution pelotons, they fight absolutely without any risk. At the same time, when millions of German soldiers die on the front, 95% of the criminals survive the war. There are another difficulty, and this is the law. The penal codex in many European countries, and I believe also in your country, are over 100 years. That years ago, a mass murderer. In the majority of the cases, a sick man. A man ran amok on the street and killed a few people they couldn't escape. A man in affect had a quarrel with his parents-in-law, killed them, killed his wife, his children. Or a man released too early from an asylum, construct a bomb, put it into a car, kill a few people, or in a train. The murderer of the old type, he saw his victims saw him. And between them was a sort of a human relation, because hatred is also a human relation. But the Nazi period gave us a murderer of a new type. Was not known before. The man sit behind a desk with one telephone call, or with a signature, or with a cable. He killed in a distance of 500 miles, 50,000 people. He don't saw them, had absolutely any feeling for them, and they don't know who ordered their death. And against this type of murderers, we have only our old insufficient law. I think I speak in a courtroom here. In old courtrooms in Germany or in Austria, you have in many the symbol of justice, justitia, with a balance. When I'm coming to a such old courtroom to be a witness or to observe a trial, and when the trial connect Nazi crimes, when I had the occasion, I say to the judge, please, for this trial, took it away. You say, why away? What you are? I don't understand you. When this house was built 120 years ago, we are very proud. Look at a nice figure. And I say, what is the spirit from this figure? What this balance command you? This balance command you punished adequately. From one side the crime, from the other side the sentence. This means, can you punish adequately? And another thing, I say to the man, we have today a trial against three defendants with 40,000 victims. In the spirit of the law, that every person was murdered has the right of a trial in connection with his death. You say yes. And then I ask him, even when you had the list with all the personal data of this murdered people, can you make 40,000 trials? No, you say. So you make one common trial. Ladies and gentlemen, when after the war was in many cases military courts, and people was condemned to death, you could say, for his crimes he paid with his life, he had only one life. When in countries like Germany or Italy, like Holland or Italy, we have real life sentences, we can say, how long the criminal was alive, he was in jail. We have in jail today in Holland, the last three, they are over 40 years in jail. And they will die in jail. But when we have a trial with a limited number of years, then the situation changed completely. May I give you an example? The transport officer of Eichmann, Franz Novak, this was, let's say, a common case between me and the Austrian police. He was Austrian, like 80% of the staff of Eichmann were Austrians. And 3/4 of the commanders of the extermination camps. This may be the reason that I live in Austria and I have my office in Austria. When he was arrested, I had a talk with the chief prosecutor, a very, very nice man. And we know that this Franz Novak transported from several European countries over 1.5 million people to Auschwitz. And the prosecutor say to me, you know, we will accuse only 400,000, this means the last Hungarian chapter. He say, believe me, I know you wish that he should be accused for 1.5 million. The sentence will be the same for 400,000 or for 1.5 million. And that moment reminds me a talk that I had in Nuremberg in 1947 with a man, an SS officer, who was the witness of the accusation. And he told me the following. In fall 1944, before the Germans left Hungary, in the SS casino, was coming together with Eichmann a number of SS officers, not very big, they knew each other, and they was talking in a sort of a code, he told me. They knew that the war will be very, very soon over, and they don't believe more in victory. He was not talking about this. And so one asked Eichmann, how much? He say, over five. This means over 5 million. And then a younger SS Hauptsturmführer asked, what will be when after the war the world will ask for the millions? Eichmann gave a very sharp and clear answer that all of us can agree with it. He say, 100 dead is a catastrophe. 1 million dead is a statistic. And this I have told the judge. You see, Eichmann was right. When you told me that the verdict for 400,000 to 1.5 million will be the same, he say, look, you are a man in a real life. You see what this. When he got life, the same life for 400 and for 4, but he will get a limited, it's still limited the number of years, it was all the same. And he say, look, when we will look for all the documents about France, Belgium, Holland, Luxembourg, Germany, Slovakia, Greece, Yugoslavia, Italy, and so on, this will took us time and look for witnesses for every part. This will took us time, 5 years, maybe, and we cannot hold them in prison so long before the maximum in Austria, 2 years before the trial, and so we can make it quick. I say, okay, no other choice. In his first trial, when the judge asked him, and on the wall was the map of Poland with the small point Auschwitz, he said, Mr. Novak, you was in Auschwitz? Yes. How big was the population in Auschwitz? He say a few thousand. In reality, according Polish sources, 1931 was about 6,500 people. And then the judge asked, you have brought so many people to Auschwitz. What do you think about this? And with the arrogancy of people from the staff of Eichmann, he say, Auschwitz was for me only a well-frequented train station. We had found a witness against him, his own secretary, and she testified against him, saying, in our office, we all know that people are going to die. He has no answer on that. This was a jury. The trial ended with a verdict, 8 years. His lawyer make an appeal. He finds some formal reasons. The High Court canceled the verdict, order a new trial before another jury. The second trial ended with an acquittal. The prosecutor find also some formal reasons, and we got the third trial, the verdict 9 years, but no possibility, everything was formally okay. And after 6 years, the man was going home, because this is a usus in many European countries, when you are in jail, after two-thirds of your term, when you have not made troubles, you clean your cell, and you are not, so he's going home. Many years later, there was a congress of mathematicians in Vienna. There was coming to me a young man, a French professor. I say, Mr. Wiesenthal, I wish to have a talk with you. Okay, please. You say, I'm Jewish. My parents die in Auschwitz. My parents know they will be transported to Auschwitz. And they had a friend, a priest, a Catholic priest. So he took me, he gave me in a monastery. And a few months later, they was taken by Franz Novak in a transport with many, many others to Auschwitz, and they was not coming back. A brother of my father survived, and he took me out from the monastery. I am now a professor of mathematics. And I find out who was responsible for the death of my parents. I know you was involved in this matter of justice, and now I am coming to you with a question. Please tell me, if this is justice, then the man for the death of my parents was less than 1 minute in jail. Is this justice? Tell me, is this justice? We spent 3 days talking about all these problems. And that I say to him, these crimes was committed in a such intensity, and they are in a such big scale, that maybe we need a cosmic law. And the law that we are using, and what remain in me, is my study of an engineer and architect, and I was 12 years as an architect. I say, you know, to use this law against these criminals is the same like building police regulations against the earthquake. Absolutely the same. We cannot fight with this. But we should look on all these trials from absolutely another point of view. Not only from the juridical, but from the educational and from the historical. Because, guilty or not guilty, these people should not die as innocent. And sometime when there are acquittals, and people protest, I say, very good. Very good that people protest. Because when this had not made on people any impression, we don't need the trials. I know that many of you will think or will ask me, how many Nazis are alive today? And how many people commit crimes? The Nazi Party had 10.5 million members, Germans and Austrians. And they depend, like every dictatorship, on a young generation. And during the war, only a small number of them was on the front and the combat lines. The majority was in Germany and Austria and the occupied territories to hold the positions. Today, 40 years after the war, are approximately about 3 million former Nazis alive. Maybe 1.8 or maybe 2 million in West Germany, between 600,000 and 700,000 in East Germany. Many of them are good communists, and they changed only the color of their party books. Between 150,000 and 180,000 in Austria, and the rest of the world. Now to another figure. How many people commit crimes? So many millions could not be murdered by a small number of people. And talks with German prosecutors, with historians, with the Central Prosecutor's Office, we estimate that about 150,000 people was involved in crimes. Now the second question. How many people get trials? What had happened in Western Europe, we know accurate. We have the accurate figures. But in the Eastern Europe, they mixed the figures of Nazis they had captured, or they was in as prisoners of war from the SS, with Nazi collaborators. So we have not accurate figures, it's only an estimation, 50,000. Not all of them was convicted, many of them was acquitted. We had not enough witnesses. They are places in Eastern Europe that no one living person remain alive. Without witnesses, only in the first few years was enough that somebody was a camp commander that you convict, bring him for a trial and convict him only for his function. Today or later, after the 50s, you need personal witnesses or written by him documents. So you see, the whole problem is a problem of an iceberg. The smaller part is over the water, the bigger part is dark and under the water. And now we should answer a question that I say at the beginning. The people ask me many times, look, you are running after Nazis in South America, in Australia, in South Africa, and other countries. They are old. They are sick. Like this man that was arrested yesterday. It's an old case of me. I find him in 69, I discover him. The story of this discovery is a movie picture. And maybe he will be extradited only for one case in the place of a few thousand cases, because when I saw that the international police is involved, it's maybe only because he killed one girl. Then people ask me, this people has absolutely any political influence? They do nothing. They has no relationship to the others. They are in such jungles or places, you know, that they are alone. And what they wish only to die in peace. Like many of these people, Nazi collaborators here, we find a few days ago, I find a man whom I knew personally, but I had forget how old he was at that time, and he killed a few people. And we find out he is today 89 years old. He lives in the States. And on the way here, I was with the director of the Office of Special Investigations. I say, I know when you bring before a trial a man of 89 years, when he is alive, I don't know, I'm not sure that he's alive. It's the whole sympathy of the public is for him. They say, look, old man, nobody care about his victims, but look on him, so a nice man, an old man. In my opinion, in my believing, whoever was involved in a genocide or in a Holocaust has not the right to die in peace. My dear friends, we had before Hitler so many conventions, like the human, like the Hague Convention, the Red Cross Conventions. They had absolutely no value. Maybe only a living example that people they was involved in a genocide will never rest. Because the history of man is a history of crimes. And what had happened in Germany, in a such intelligent and cultural country, can happen again, believe me. Not in the same way, assimilated to the new conditions of their time. In the second part, I'm talking too long. But you are very good listeners, so this provoked me to extend a little my lecture a little. I believe when the history will repeat, also my personal example will repeat, and maybe will be more Wiesenthals, and they and these people should know who was involved in it will never rest. A few years ago, I had two journalists from Israel, and they've asked me, how is it possible for you, 40 years, it was 38 years at that time, it was a half of my life, to do the same, to walk between blood and tears, and not to become crazy, and not accuse innocent people? I say this is for me possible because I am not a hater. When I will be a hater, I had not so carefully analyzed every case. I had accused innocent people. We had in our office 3,000 cases. We succeeded in about over 1,100 to bring for justice in different parts of the world. And only 4 people accused me for libel. 3 lose the case, and the last, this was Mr. Frederick Peter in Vienna, he dropped the case, he took it away because he could not win it. But this smart journalist say to me, okay, you are not a hater, this help you. But what gives you a satisfaction? And Mr. Wiesenthal, we will not accept when you will say, you find a Nazi, bring him for a trial. This is a satisfaction. No. No. We will not accept it. Must be something else that help you to remain in it. I find the answer, and I hope this was a good answer, because when this was published, whole Israel held smile. I say, you know what is my biggest satisfaction? When 2 Nazis had a quarrel, one threatened the other, I will go to Simon Wiesenthal and I will tell him everything about you. And believe me, they are coming. They are my best witnesses, without salary. They are not because they are seeking justice, jealousy, some problems with a legacy between relatives and so. Okay, let us go to the next part. In these 40 years, I was looking for an answer for myself. I know that our history, our Jewish history, and the human history is a history of crimes. For this purpose will be next year published in the United States after my work of 6 years, a calendar. A calendar about the Jewish martyrdom. From January 1st to December 31st. The day and the month is the same. The year is variable. And not one day in the 365 days of the calendar without minimum 3 events in connection with our martyrdom. In many discussions with young people and universities, or with people that are coming to visit my office, I find out that they believe that everything has started with Hitler. My dear friends, Hitler invented absolutely nothing. The technology of his time gave him the possibility to fulfill a dream of thousands and thousands haters of Jews during the many, many centuries. And I was going back in the history, stopped a while in the time of the Inquisition, published a book, Sails of Hope. And what I saw in the time of the Inquisition, 1492, this was like in Europe in the time of Hitler, 1942. And you cannot imagine how much the Nazis was take from the time of the Inquisition. The Aryan Papers, this was a Spanish invention, limpieza de sangre. At that time, because the people was living in the same place many, many generations, the Spanish in Spain to need a limpieza de sangre, this means a certificate that you have good blood, non-Jewish blood and not Muslim blood. You need 7 generations. When Heydrich was starting with the Aryan Papers, first of all, they planned also to make 7 generations. But in Europe, what people was transferred from one place to the other was impossible, so they give it cheaper, 3 generations. The Germans had a number of slogans, absolutely the same slogans during the time of Inquisition. And after many, many studies, contacts with philosophers, with historians, I have estimated that Holocaust or genocide has 6 components. The first component is hatred. Hatred don't need a description. We are living with many, many haters in all the countries of the world. And hatred survived these 2 monsters of the human history, Hitler and Stalin. And I think that the main problem of our time is not to reduce the weapons, but to reduce hatred. Because technology without hatred can be a blessing. But technology with hatred is a disaster. I hope they will reduce weapons. This means at the moment they can kill the world 8 times. With reduced weapons they can kill only 4 times the world. But the main problem is reduce hatred, is to bring an understanding between people. And in all countries of the world, including Soviet Union, are people, they wish peace. They are not haters. This is only the doctrine of a government make them haters, develop them haters. Like I saw with all my Nazi crime cases, no one was born as a criminal. Only the society and the political party made from him a criminal. The second component, they are dictatorship. Look on it 2,000 years. An emperor, a king, a pope, an archbishop, a president, a general. These people, they had the power in their hand. In a dictatorship with hatred, what they need? They need the component number 3, the bureaucracy. And bureaucrats are not only people, they are sitting in the offices and they made comments and books and so on, they wrote letters. These people, they have operated gas chambers. They are bureaucrats. People in the execution pelotons, they are bureaucrats. People, they was in the cellars of the Inquisition, they was bureaucrats. And now the component number 4. This is the technology. When the Spanish Inquisition had the technology of the time of Hitler, they had not give the Jews the alternative, baptize or die, or baptize or go out from the country. I find in the archives of the Inquisition, in the number of their victims since the beginning of the Inquisition until the last century, the day it was cancelled, the Inquisition was over 1 million. With their poor technology, and in the 80s, in the 1480 or 1485, I don't remember accurate, they was looking for inventors. They could make a machine. They can kill this machine 7 people in the same time. So when they had the technology of time of Hitler, no Jew had survived in Spain, no Protestant had survived in France, and maybe no Catholic in England. Hatred plus technology, please remember it. This is also in our time today. You can imagine when haters, terrorists, came in the possession of technology of our time. What will be this for the world? And now, the component number 5. Component number 5 concerns the time. In what time should be that people can kill innocent people? A crisis or a war? A crisis, you need people whom you make responsible for a disaster. Or a war, when the country is closed, and during a such war, you can do everything what you wish. The Turks could kill this 1.5 million Armenians, 1915, only during the war. And believe me, Hitler had studied very, very carefully the Holocaust of the Armenians. In component number 6, this is a minority as a victim. This is the scapegoat. This can be a political minority, a social minority, a racial minority. Please, when you will remember the 6 components, open a history book, look on it, if happens something against innocent people, you will always find the 6 components. When I had lunch today with a number of young people, students, they asked me what drives me. And I have promised by the end of my lecture I will tell it. 2 years ago, and people celebrate my 75th birthday, because after the celebration, I sit with my wife, and she say, look, we are both 75. Not only you was liberated, not only you survived. Is it not time? Maybe these few years that they are before us, to live in peace, without threats, without the police before the door, because we had 1.5 years ago a bomb in our house. Let us go to Israel, live with the grandchildren, or go to another place. And I say to my wife, you remember what I have told you in March 47 about one incident. And this incident drives me, and I will tell you what had happened. Professor Rettig told you that I left the Americans, worked with them, but separate. And we create our documentation center in Linz. And in March 47, I had 3 visitors, 3 rabbis. He was coming to me, telling me that they find out that in a castle near Villach in Carinthia in Austria are a Jewish library. And they hear that there are a big number of Jewish religious books. And you know, the relationship of a religious Jew to a religious book is like a human relation. So they say with these words, please help us to save the books. I told them why religious books are in a castle in Carinthia. Before the war, maybe 10 Jewish families was living in whole Carinthia. And I told them about the plans of the Nazis when, after the war, and maybe later, because they declared the war to every Jew in the world, will be not one Jew more. They will build a big Jewish museum. And for this purpose, they confiscated a big number of Jewish books. For this purpose, they select people from the concentration camps, like from Auschwitz, special Jewish types, brought them to the University of Strasbourg, kill with injections, cook the bodies and had skeletons of the Jews to present them maybe in 100 or more years as typical Jews. And one day in March, with these three rabbis, I was going from Linz through the mountains in a heavy snow and came to Villach, stay overnight. And the next morning, was going to the castle. I spoke to the manager, and he opened the castle. From the cellars to the attics, was books and books and books. He was going, took one book. This was marked from the owners. This is from Warsaw, this is from Vilna, this is from Krakow, this is from Prague. Another book was Paris, from Paris, mixed. And in one moment, I hear a doll behind me. And one of the rabbis was from the pole. They bring water. And when he recovered, he began to cry and say, look, this is my own prayer book. And he opened the cover and say, look, here is a message of my sister. And the message was in Yiddish language. And I saw it before me every time. This brown cover. Whoever will find this siddur, siddur does mean a prayer book, give it to my beloved brother, Rabbi Yehoshua Zeidman. The murderers are in our village. They are in the next home. Please don't forget us and don't forget our murderers. Going back, I was the whole time thinking about this. And this was not only a message of a sister to a brother. This was a message for me of the millions they die to us. They survive. This could be written not only by this Jewish woman. This could be written from a Czech woman in Lidice, from a French woman in Oradour, from an Italian woman from Marzabotto, from a Greek woman from Clisura. For me, this became the last will. And in this car, on the way back, I decided to help to execute this last will. Thank you.
I think I speak for all the forum and everyone here when I say thank you again to Mr. Wiesenthal for sharing his time. He has already skipped one plane to extend his time with us, and we've got about 20-some minutes for questions, and then we will have to leave. So please line up in an orderly manner and along the aisles, and we will alternate questions as long as possible. So please keep the questions short so we can get as many in as possible.
Stay with me. Maybe I don't understand the question. And help me.
Dr. Wiesenthal, do you feel convinced about Joseph Mengele, that the true Mengele was drowned in Brazil, or that it was a hoax and he is still alive according to the latest news stories originating in Israel?
They are not latest news. They are speculations. This, what was found in Brazil, this is Mengele. For me, without any doubt. I was 25 years involved in it. And I know there are people, their dream, especially these people on whom Mengele made the experiments, to see him before a trial. It also was my dream. But I am realistic enough. And I was talked to the people. They told me, somebody tell he saw Mengele in April this year and say, you must know the man because he say he works for you. They give me the name I never heard. And I say, when this part of the information is false, is the whole information false? Please.
I was wondering, there are those who say or believe that Stalin's crimes were as bad or worse than Hitler's, that the crimes in the Soviet Union were as bad or worse. I don't know whether you think that's a meaningful comparison, but in any case, would you agree with that assessment?
This is a question that you ask. What is more worse, typhus or cholera? The number of innocent people that was killed by Stalin are three times bigger. He had enough time to do it, more than Hitler. This was one of the reasons why I joined the people of the Sakharov Committee. I was three times president of Sakharov Hearing. One time in Rome, I invite all the communists, and I knew a lot of them, to be there and to hear. And in many Italian newspapers, I say, the only country in our world today when the name anti-fascist are an honor is Italy. But a man who say he is an anti-fascist and he ignore what's going on in Soviet Union, he lose the right to call himself anti-fascist. And this was published in all the newspapers. Nazism and communism, these two movements. Nazism was in the ideology and in the practice a crime. Communism is only in the practice a crime, because in the ideology you have nothing criminal. But for the people they are victims is no difference. The period of Stalin is over, and we know that the power of the KGB is not more so big like the power in the previous time. But also in our time are thousands and thousands in the silence camp of Siberia. In my first press conference as the president of the Sakharov Tribunal, when the people from the press ask, why you now occupied with these crimes? And I say, when the world become knowledge about the Nazi crimes, it was too late to help the victims because they were dead. But it's not too late today to help victims of oppression in camps, and say psychiatric clinics and so on. This is my answer to you.
Dr. Wiesenthal, recently I used your book, Sales of Hope, in one of my classes, and I believe the thesis of the book was that Christopher Columbus sailed to America to look for a homeland for the Jews. Would you comment on this, and also would you comment on what has recently been happening regarding neo-Nazi groups saying that the entire Holocaust was a fabrication?
Yes. Coming to this book, during my lecture, I told that I am going back the centuries to see how this hatred had developed. And when I stopped in the time of Spanish Inquisition and was going from archive to archive, and what I saw was coming a man with the nature of an adventure.
A 10-year-old.
Samanka smells from him. And only two Maranos, two secret Jews, like Sant'Angel, Luis de Sant'Angel, and Diego Dieza, they help him. Why these people made a risk? Because this was possible according to the believing of that time that they will not come back. And this intrigues me, the whole matter. I was not my idea to make a book about Columbus. But through this intrigue, first of all, I saw the first lies in the history, in all the historical books, that Queen Isabella paid them money, give money for it, for the whole trip. They have no money, and they alone give their jury to get money for them. No one word is true. The second, the purpose of the trip, to bring Christianity in the new territories. Also not true. Was not a priest on this trip. But what I find, I had not believed that the official interpreter for the trip was an interpreter for the Hebrew language. When I discover it and think that I will publish it, people will say Wiesenthal is crazy. So I was going to the Royal Library in Portugal. Look, and the all what Vasco da Gama, what remained from Vasco da Gama's trip. And then I saw he is also an interpreter for Hebrew language. Then I go again to the Biblioteca Colombina, and what I find out, in the believing of that time, was Asia and India synonymous, and they believed that the lost 10 tribes of Israel are living in India. And because they had no people, they know some languages from India, they think they will find Jews there, and so they can communicate with them. I remember I have a good friend. He was the deputy chief of the accusation. When he wrote the book, Sails of Hope, he said to me, Simon, it's naturally sure the first man who is going when Columbus landed on the Caribbean will be the interpreter to talk to the people. And he say, I know the answer that they give him. Now will begin the Tsores. This means now will begin the troubles. So, this is one thing. And the second answer concerns the neo-Nazi movement, yes? This is a very important question, and I am happy that somebody asked me it. There are many countries, neo-Nazi groups, also in your country. In your country, maybe 85 or 90 groups. I remember when in my office had two visitors, very, very nice people, Senator Bob Dole and his wife Elizabeth. I was talking to them about this 90 neo-Nazi groups. And they were shocked when they saw the publications of them. The publications, they are like 1943, like in the time of Nazis. In United States, I believe that your democracy is so powerful that these people are not a danger. But in Europe, the European neo-Nazis couldn't exist with all this printed propaganda coming from your country. American Nazi Party, Liberty Bell, and many, many other organizations, White People's Party, White People's Workers' Party. I cannot tell you because maybe a number of organizations has the same membership. It's also possible to make an impression. What is printed in your country under misusing the First Amendment, what is the best installation in the world, is a crime. In Germany, also in Austria, are people in jail for distributing these brochures and leaflets. They are printed free in your country. After Hitler, we have in all European countries a law against racial hatred. I know the First Amendment cannot be reformed because in the First Amendment is naturally the free speech, but this is not free for slander, for bigotry, for hatred. But you need a law against racial hatred like we have it in Europe. Then you will have a such law. These people could not print these brochures and send around the world in five languages.
Yes, Mr. Wiesenthal, what about the Seaman Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles? I've heard a lot of different things about it. Some people think it's just kind of a publicity outlet and a way to make money for Rabbi Heyer, the director, that it doesn't do much actual work in catching war criminals or Nazis, that doesn't do much good. What's your opinion of the things that go on there? Do you have an opinion?
Sure. And this is the center of my name. Look. The Americans know how to make money for their purposes. I don't need to teach them. We are planning now to build a big center. 9 floors. You forget one thing. When Jews emigrated to the United States, all of them emigrated to the East Coast and built their organizations. When they had come from the Yeshiva University and asked me that they wish to name a center on my name in New York, I had said no. But I was before many times in Los Angeles, and I knew that today in Los Angeles, and at that time also, lived 600,000 Jews, and they had absolutely nothing, a spiritual desert. So I saw, I agree with you, that somebody wished to know something, he don't need to go to Israel or to go to New York. This was the reason, absolutely. And like every young organization, dynamic, made the old Jewish organizations a little nervous because the old are working on a routine and they have not the routine at the moment. Maybe in 10 years they will have the routine and they will work like the other Jewish organizations. They have my full support. Even when I not agree with all their steps, I cannot be the whole day in Los Angeles and let my work in Vienna. But I know that we made in Los Angeles the first time that a Jewish organization made this. I asked them to do it, a commemoration of the Holocaust of the Armenians. We made the first time we invite gypsies to make their commemoration in our center. We invade Poles. And we know that when we Jews will fight alone against a repetition, we will lose. 2,000 years the world was silent when they heard the Jews are murdered. This is the first time in our 2,000 years martyrdom that the Jews and 15 other nations had the same enemy. And we make one of the biggest failures after the Holocaust. The Jews separated from the other victims, and now they are crying, they are isolated. Against the repetition, we cannot fight alone. In Europe, you know, we have in many countries, there are not exist special organizations of Jewish survivors. Not in Holland, not in Italy, not in Denmark, not in Norway. All together, we speak with one voice against fascism, against anti-Semitism, because we see in them a danger. They start with the Jews, but later also the others pay the bill. When I have had talks here with people, they believe they are the owners of the Holocaust, that we cannot live alone. You have in the United States more non-Jewish survivors of concentration camp than Jewish. Hmm. And I asked them, for an example, this was a group of Dutch survivors from the camps, non-Jewish. And I asked them if they have contact with Jewish survivors organizations. They say they have notified them, but we never heard from them. You see, this is not good. Believe me, this is not good. 2 years ago, 6 people met, 3 Jews and 3 Poles. Who was the 3 Poles? 2 university professors from the Georgetown University and 1 the former director of Radio Free Europe. All of them, all 3, was emissaries and couriers from the Polish underground, going months through Hungary or through Sweden to London to bring knowledge about the Jewish tragedy. And the 3 Poles, 3 Jews, was the former director of the Jewish Historical Institute in Warsaw, Professor Borowicz, a man who represents the Anti-Defamation League in Rome, and I. And we sit together, make a manifesto to end the hatred between the Jews and the Poles. Because this is important. In our time, we should know we have the same enemy. The enemy of the free world is the enemy of the Poles, and our enemy also. And put in this manifesto the 1,000 years of Jewish history in Poland. When the Jews was expelled from Germany, who take them? The Poles. In no European country, the Jews had a such big cultural autonomy like in Poland. And this is true during the Nazi period. Maybe 50,000 Jews, 50,000 Nazis, Poles collaborate with the Nazis against the Jews. But this 40 or 50,000 Jews, they survive Poland. They survive with the help only of Poles. And from the other side, what Jewish communists have done against the Poles, we take it in our days. Because when they are people, they say all 35 million Poles are responsible for this 50,000 Polish collaborators. In the same time, he must say the Jews are responsible for the Jewish communists. And we made this manifesto to end the hatred. It was published in all the Polish emigration press, and it was published big time, part in Israel, excerpts in France and in many, many other countries. And we had a very good echo from the Polish side. Naturally, was some anti-Semites between the Polish emigration like it was haters on our side, they will never forget, and so on and so. But I feel to end hatred is one of the fundamentals of the free world. My dear friends, I'm very, very tired. This is today my last lecture. I'm here 19 days, and I'm 77 years old. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.